Stephen Franks is a former Member of Parliament, a partner or principal at the Wellington specialist public law firm Franks Ogilvie. He's been probably in the first few years, possibly one of our largest supporters in indirect ways. Stephen, thanks again for joining Taxpayer Talk.
A pleasure.
Three Waters has obviously been our big battle over the last 6 or so months. We've had, I would have had hundreds of people emailing me saying, what are we doing next? Are we suing the government? I've had to sit on my hands and not tell people what's been coming down the pipeline with this water users group that your firm has established. Tell us, what is the, give us the elevator pitch on how you're going to defeat Three Waters in court.
The case does is challenge the very foundation of the minister's recommendations that went to cabinet. It says that she illegally, or we'll say improperly, advised the cabinet that the treaty required them to uphold iwi / Māori, and those were the terms used throughout it, interests in the Three Waters infrastructure. And the essence of the case is that first the treaty was between iwi and the Crown. It wasn't Māori and the Crown. And the traditional and respectable historical and constitutional position has been that it assures rights to iwi. It wasn't a race compact between Pākehā and Māori. It was between the Crown and the people who had the rights, which were various in all over the country, to their property, the people there who were iwi. So the case says the minister took papers to cabinet which were fundamentally mistaken to try and set up a governance regime that effectively gives veto powers to a racially qualified group outside of democracy.
So, I mean, this is the problem we've run into quite a lot, because while the Taxpayers Union's been accused of all sorts of things around running racial arguments around Three Waters, actually, we've primarily run on the economics of it. We think that it will be a disaster in terms of the costs imposed on ratepayers. But what we do think is we're Democrats, and these are ratepayer-funded assets that you are taking away to put in these co-governed entities with 50% unaccountable to the people that paid for it.
What's worse than that is, you probably know in the detail, that a lot of the decisions have to be made by 75% majority. So if you've got 50%, you can block any, you've got a veto power.
Well, and of course, and a right to block is a right to extract, yep. Or rent seeking, as the economists would call it. And I sort of had, as an organisation, we have sort of had to come around to the view that actually we've got to address the elephant in the room on this. And we surveyed our supporters at the end of last year, and it was very clear that this sort of watering down of democracy, or frankly, smashing of democracy in this instance. But let's just come back to, do you accept that Māori and iwi have property interests in water?
It's almost certain that there will be some water sources, there will be some streams, there will be some lakes, pools, places that are involved with water supply where they have interest. There will also be water bodies where iwi have an interest in waste that goes into them. So there's absolutely no doubt that there are claims that should have been dealt with decades ago, and they should have had defined rights. No, so that's not an issue.
But that's different to the water assets that we're focused on.
Exactly.
That, with respect, our supporters, i.e. ratepayers, many of which are Māori, have paid for. Do the property interests extend to that?
No. The treaty rights are to the taonga that were there at the time, or which are derived from them. These new structures, the whole thrust of the Three Waters scheme is in fact to take away assets that have been never any doubt about who had them. They were held by councils who hold as agents and trustees for the people who funded it and for the people who use it, for the citizens and the ratepayers. Those assets are going to be put into the control of people who can be as dud as you like for as long as you like, and the normal democratic right to get rid of people whose use-by date's gone has been taken away. We think that's offensive. When I say we, the court, the case will argue that that expropriation, even if they claim that the ownership of those entities remains with local authorities, all of the rights that matter are being taken. And they're the rights that are often described as rangatiratanga, but they're the rights that are just what we bundle up and call property rights, the rights to control, dispose of, to use and enjoy, to exclude others. They're the rights that are needed to run an efficient business. They're the rights that have naturally been seen as the local authority relationship to the water assets. And we're saying this sudden novel argument that there is an iwi over, there's a general iwi Māori interest in these assets is wrong.
So, I mean, this is the catch-all that I battled with the Minister Naya Mahuta when she was on at this podcast, that in short, and it sounds like when I speak, I had over the summer break, I was around at a Labour Party MP's house for my, who I'm not going to disclose, I'm not going to embarrass them, but it was very clear that it had been sold internally to provincial Labour MPs that Three Waters was effectively our requirement to comply with the Crown's obligations under the treaty. And that's what the point Nanaia Mahuta has made at many points. In effect, is your court case or your judicial review calling that claim out?
Yes, we've engaged two QCs on this, and the QC whose research into this I found most interesting, and the reason why we actually were ready to go ahead was because it was so intriguing, has been back through the early cases where the Court of Appeal and Justice Cook and others were saying what the treaty did and did not.
This is the principles of the treaty.
Exactly. And it was very clear that they were using the notion of partnership as an analogy, as a way of describing the obligations of mutual good faith, because partners owe those to each other and they must be trustworthy to each other. That they drew on partnership because it was a convenient shorthand way of describing what they wanted to be the relationship. But it wasn't of what they wanted the duties to be seen as. And this is all in the statement of claim, which is now publicly available. But we're saying those early good faith exhortations by the judges to the Crown to be fair, and expectation by them that iwi had similar obligations to the Crown, have now been essentially abused. They've taken the word partnership and they've converted it from being a like description of what iwi owed to saying that it's governance, where that was never in question. The judges who were looking at those cases, I suspect the early judges would have been not only amazed but appalled to think that it had been turned into a way of ending democracy at a local level in relation to these assets. So we're giving the courts a chance to say, is this really what was meant?
So the question of the court is, does this concept of partnership, to use the shorthand term, extend to co-governance, or does it mean co-governance? And secondly, does it even apply to property created, paid for, the pipes and pumps?
And always owned, ever since it's existed, always owned.
But the key point is after the treaty.
Well, but always owned, clearly owned by people who were there for all everyone in the community. What we're saying is that the minister has taken an opportunity to deal with a need to create a set of privileges that actually are in bad faith, that actually go against what the courts laid down should be the approach to the treaty.
That segues quite well into my next question, which was, you go further in your statement of claim and assert that what the government is doing around Three Waters is actually a breach of the treaty. Take me through that.
Well, at the first level, it's actually a breach of the treaty's undertaking to iwi, because this scheme is going to subordinate, if there are iwi interests in particular water bodies or assets that are bound up in this, this will subordinate the interests of those who actually have the claim to, in some cases, bodies controlled by their mortal traditional enemies. And these regions are so big that if this were really a reflection of some treaty obligation, you could expect the first claim about breach of the treaty would be from the iwi whose assets are going to be put under the control of
enemies. You're saying the government is, if it goes through, is vulnerable to iwi groups who are saying, well, no, hang on, that's our property interests and now we need to share it with the neighbouring iwi that's not protecting us?
Well, it's not even sharing it. If it's a small iwi or hapu,
you'll be crowded out.
They won't even have a representative. They won't even be at the table. Now, undoubtedly, the minister's got hundreds of millions to throw around and buy people off. But we're saying that is very much in breach of the treaty and that it isn't in good faith and it's not reasonable and it's sacrificing values that were part of what the treaty set out to offer, an equality before the law.
One of the things I'm always very suspicious of is people who assert, let's sue the government in relation to an upcoming law, because of course New Zealand's pretty unusual and we don't have supreme law, don't have a written constitution, etc. Parliament is supreme, you know, look, public law 101 type stuff. How are you getting around? I mean, what does a win look like here? Because the courts can't overrule Parliament if it passes this Three Waters regime.
No, you're absolutely right. And we've got a Parliament that has a majority in the Labour Party and they could pass a law like this. But the courts and Parliament have always had a relationship. It's called the words comity, where they try to respect each other's sphere. So traditionally, if Parliament has something before it, the courts will not interfere. It's for Parliament to decide what it does. But if it's the officials and the ministers, they have to act, they are subject to the law like everyone else, and it's for them to respect what the courts declare to be the law. So we're saying the courts should get the opportunity to say whether or not the minister's papers were misleading and gave
The minister's papers claimed that Three Waters
had to be done to meet the treaty obligations. And she
and that's what you're challenging, isn't it?
Yes,
that,
it is.
And, that very advice.
Yeah, and her papers said that she'd had advice to that effect from Crown Law. Now, we think that's unlikely to be true. We think it would be, if there was anything like that, it would be highly qualified. But she was using the references to Crown Law to try and give clout.
Well, even with us. I mean, yeah. She uses, it's the same with the economic argument. She says, we've got peer-reviewed advice, without mentioning that the peer review absolutely decimated what the advice was.
Well, we rather hope that Crown Law, we'd be sorry if we thought Crown Law had provided her with the sort of backing she's claiming, because it would say that they're making it up.
So are you really, this is really about calling Nanaia Mahuta's bluff?
Well, it's more than that. I mean, let me just go back a moment, that conventionally the Parliament would not move on a matter that was before the courts until the courts had had a reasonable chance to declare what the law was. Parliament might then decide to change it, but it would not move while this question was legitimately before the courts.
But the government could no longer claim falsely, in your or our opinion, that the Three Waters regime is consistent with the treaty.
No. If the court declares what we think they should and will, that's exactly the case. And so it has a moral character, component too. It would say if the parliament goes ahead with this, they have no excuse. They have decided to trash democracy, not because they say they're bound to, but because they want to. And this principle goes throughout a lot further. This is fundamental, this case.
Well, it's fundamental on where whole other areas of public policy are going in trashing democracy. This is probably, this is a damn important cause for us to get behind.
That's what we thought. We were interested enough in the QC's analysis, very detailed analysis, to think this case must be brought even before we found the ratepayer groups and the individuals and the others who were willing to form the water users group to do it. So we were ready and we filed it on the 3rd of December before the bill had been brought to Parliament.
We didn't yet have the bill because it was being kicked back.
That's right. If the government is being constitutionally correct in accordance with convention, they might have withheld it because of the filing. I'm not claiming that they have, but that would have been the approach
back in the day.
When constitutional convention was more respected, they would have said the proper thing is to wait until the court has ruled on this and then file the bill.
But it's not really in people's consciousness because we're obviously recording this podcast for our announcement to our people that, our Auckland branch, the Auckland Ratepayers Alliance, and our sister organisation, the Tauranga Ratepayers Alliance, are among the founding members of the plaintiff or the applicant, the water users group. I don't yet think the significance of this case or its existence is yet in the consciousness.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Of Wellington.
Yeah, it was, of course, a pretty busy period in news sense.
Well, not just that, we were let out of, I remember that, we were going to do this before Christmas, but then you let out a lockdown and we only had 10 days to go before the wind down. So I guess let's run through the questions. So does this delay Three Waters? Probably.
It should, but if the government was going to be really ruthlessly hard-nosed, it's only a convention they're overruling. There's no court could stop them from putting it before Parliament. But it would be,
pretty outrageous.
Absolutely outrageous. I mean, there's been plenty of previous case law where respectable politicians have said we should wait to know what the court says.
Well, especially when it is the main justification or plank of why the government is going through these reforms. Yep. So what are your key challenges,
It'll be timing. The courts try to deal with really important constitutional issues speedily, but the Crown will undoubtedly be saying this isn't sufficient and this is all but before Parliament and you should leave it to Parliament. And even if you do rule on this, Parliament can ignore you, so why waste your time? That'll be the kind of line they'll get. The courts have been fairly robust in most Westminster democracies in saying, hang on, if this is an illegality and there's a plausible case there, we will consider it.
Especially if they've misstated the law.
Yeah.
So what do you need then? I mean, there are very clearly tens, probably hundreds of thousands of New Zealanders that are very concerned about Three Waters. There's a lot of groups that are now coming out against it. I know there's a lot of councils. Have you got councils on board?
Yeah, we've got councillors who've signed up as supporters, and we actually had a couple of deputy mayors who would have been founder members but were strongly advised by their, in one case, chief executive, in another case, mayors, not to be seen publicly because the councils have been negotiating with the Crown and with the ministers and so forth. But there are a lot of people who are closely involved who are interested, and we will, for it to be really powerful, it will need to be a case that is covered. It'll be, need to be one where people at last hear the arguments on what the treaty
It's the
really
argument
is.
That New Zealand has been struggling to have for it's a been, generation.
It's the argument people have been too scared to raise for fear of being accused of racism. And this has been the situation for a lot of the councils. We know that in the large council group that has rejected the position of the local government New Zealand, I think there's 30-odd councils.
This is the breakout because local government New Zealand got into bed with the government for a check for the check.
We know that many of them are very concerned about what this will do to relationships within their communities, including relationships with iwi and among iwi.
Yeah.
But everyone is literally too scared to even say that this is a significant issue. So someone has to do it, but it really needs to be reported. And one of the things about a court case is that the journalists who are afraid of being cancelled themselves or criticised for reporting something that's unpopular with the government, it's very hard to criticise someone for covering a court case, and that the exploration of these issues in court, unemotionally in court, is an ideal way to get it out there. We've had contact with some pretty reputable historians saying, thankfully, someone is at last looking at what the law or what lawyers have been wrongly claiming about the treaty. I think we'll find this is a very healthy process for New Zealand. But of course, you said, what do we need? We need money. It's highly unlikely that the case will end at the High Court if we win or if the Crown won. To get these arguments put by the two QCs before
the
Supreme
QCs?
Court, Grant Illingworth QC and Gary Judd QC. And for an ordinary court case these days with our Rolls-Royce justice system, and even
by Rolls-Royce you mean expensive, right?
Expensive, exactly. I can't see we could get to an end of this case for under $250,000. Or
I think even that's low.
I think it is too.
But I'm conscious, Steve, that you've really picked this up and took it as
a matter of principle.
Yeah,
and as a citizen, and as someone saying, you know, I'm prone, like everyone is, to say someone ought to do it. Someone needs to challenge this. You hear claims and say, that's nonsense. That's never been the legal position. And then no one says anything.
Yeah.
So it has to be tested in the court. The courts, in a way, created the notion of the treaty partnership, although they didn't say that it was a partnership. They said it had imposed obligations akin. And it's time for the court to look at where that's been going and to draw a line.
Steve, this is very unusual. The Taxpayers Union, as you know, to fundraise for a third-party group, but we're tipping some money in. We've obviously our sister groups were founding members. If you go to taxpayers.org.nz/water. Or the water users group, is that waterusers.org.nz?
Yes.
It's on our, it'll be with the statement of claim linked in the description to this podcast. But I think it's fair to say that this, I disagree, this isn't $250,000 case. I think this is half or even $1 million because it is just so incredibly important. I'm very encouraged of both the caliber and those two QCs are quite diverse in terms of world views and respectable, that I think you will certainly hit the ground running. But I wouldn't want to see a situation where you run out of gas in the tank. I know that you've, your firm have personally got a lot invested in this, but you know, you can't save the world if you can't pay the rent. So I'm certainly going to be picking up the phone and encouraging friends to chip in to the good cause. Final question: what is the what's the timeline on this, and how can people find out more?
They should. The timeline: we should get the statement of defence from the Crown by the third week of next month.
So, third week of March.
February.
Already in February. But, it's been a long summer.
That's right. I think the latest date, something like the 25th or something like that, this month. So we see the statement of defence.
Because the working days is doesn't start in.
Over Christmas, it goes into suspension, and I did the calculation, or Amy, our litigator, did the calculation, and I can't remember exactly what it is. But it's quite possible that if they want to play real hardball, that they may try a strikeout application. So
they just grind you down with
One
money.
Of the things they do, absolutely, and they've been doing it, for example, in these immigration cases or the MIQ cases.
Like the grounded Kiwis. Exactly. They just keep delaying it.
Yeah.
Oh, Your Honour, we can't possibly be ready for this. We've only had 3 months. And, of course, knowing that a case like that will be a moot point.
Yep. So we think that that unless it looks as if we're overwhelmingly well-funded, that one of their tactics will be just try to burn us off.
Yeah.
And so there'll be lots of interlocutories and all sorts of technical points taken.
Have you had much media? I know I said the last one, but the last question, but we're very aware of the accusations of being called racist and stuff. That probably the most disappointing moment last year was that outrageous stuff piece that said that the Taxpayers Union, the National Party and some others were quote unquote fueling the fans of racism, when actually as an organisation we have really strived to play three wars with a straight bat and lead with the economics rather than the race issue, because of course, you know, we're a taxpayer group, not a one law for all group. But do you think you'll get the necessary airing in the media, or do you think that the establishment is going to try and ignore you?
Oh, I'm sure that they will, and they will more than ignore. I would say that they'll try to make it discreditable to be interested in the case and to treat it as if it were that there were issues that should be asked. They'll try and make it one of those questions that it's improper to even raise. But I think that's a bit late. I mean, if I give an example, Dame Anne Salmond has had 3 articles over the last year, which I've read quite carefully, because if I might unfairly summarize, I think she's saying this is going badly awry. I think in her articles she's saying...
You mean generally the race relations, co-governance?
The treaty, the approach to the treaty. And I know that she's been quite explicit. She thinks that the way that the judges more recently have been interpreting the treaty, or the claims they're making about the treaty, are wrong, and they are inimical to democracy, and that they are creating, she is the one, is one of the ones who says, they are creating out of this an approach that sees the treaty as a set of race rights instead of a set of iwi property rights. So the zeitgeist, it's changing. She, of all the historians who involved in this, to be saying that the law is getting this badly wrong, it's serious. And maybe the media won't, you know, the censors and the media won't have picked it up, but I think that this is the proper way to approach an issue that people have been too scared to touch. They will, of course, scream racism, but if they read the statement of claim, they couldn't be honest if they would say that.
Do you think if the government, Nanaia Mahuta and or officials, have consciously been dishonest in misrepresenting what the law is, i.e. they knew that Crown, that they were presenting something that they said Crown Law was saying that they weren't, do you think that would be justify resignation at the ministerial level?
I think in New Zealand we've lost the habit of Westminster responsibility, but this is direct responsibility. You know, it's not.
She said it to. She said it on this podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, an easy way to know would be for her to say, show us the opinions
release
that Crown Lawyers. Yeah, and they've already referred to them in a way that is intended to influence us. The conventional law on privilege is that that waives privilege, so there's no doubt that we should see the Crown Law advice. It would show whether that she had a credible bona fide reason to use that language or whether Crown Law actually addressed the right issues. It's very, very important. In this case, Crown Law reports to the Attorney General. The Attorney General and the Solicitor General were the term used for the Attorney General was the legal conscience of Parliament. And these are matters where it's vital that people know whether Crown Law itself has decided to become woke and subordinate normal legal principles and normal legal judgment and integrity and become part of an ideological campaign. We'll see. This case will unmask some of that.
And, well, from the Taxpayers Union perspective, we look forward to that unmasking. Naturally, we'll keep our members and supporters up to date. But in the meantime, good luck, Stephen, and I certainly hope you attract the support you need. And thanks for joining Taxpayer Talk.
Thank you, Jordan.